Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. The guest that I have for you today is a beautiful, beautiful person, so thoughtful, so authentic, and so willing to do the work, right? And so that is a huge part of this anti-racism, this activist, this social justice journey. Just being willing to do the work, to put in the time, to have the uncomfortable conversations. And so I am so excited to bring to you today my good friend, Rivka Bent. In true fashion with her last name, Rivka says that her professional pathway has been anything but linear. She is bilingual and biliterate in Spanish and English and began her career with the California Association for Bilingual Education. Her work experience touches both education, military, veteran advocacy, the construction industry, and arts and design. So she has a very interdisciplinary background. She has a BA in organizational leadership and considers herself to identify best with the servant leadership style. And I think that's something that comes out so strongly in her personality, in the way that she sees leading, the way that she shows up in this world. And I'm very excited to share that with you all today. In partnership with Maria Shriver, Rivka founded the first Scholastic Program of Architects of Change, which teaches students to challenge what is, imagine what can be, and move humanity forward. That is the work that we are all doing. Rivka is passionate to create a sense of belonging for all people with a focus on the work in diversity, equity, and inclusion. Now, with all these receipts, Rivka is a very accomplished woman, and her favorite title on the planet is that of mom, which I love that so much. I love that so much about her. So we're going to have a great conversation today. Please join me in welcoming Rivka Bent to the Inclusion First Podcast. Hi, Rivka. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so happy that you said yes to being on this podcast. How are you today?
Hi, Carrie. I am doing well. That terminology well is, I think, a little misleading and always makes me question, am I well? But no, I really have to say that when you asked me to be a part of this podcast and even just being asked feels like such an honor and an affirmation for me. So I feel so blessed coming into today just for being asked. And I'm really grateful to you for breathing that life into my soul. So thank you so much.
Rivka, it is my pleasure. I love talking with you. I love your perspective. You're so smart and so quick and a really like beautiful and delightful person. So this is going to be amazing.
Thank you. I hope that can we market that out to my family? Carrie said it. It is so. Thank you so much,
everyone. Yes. All right. So we're just going to jump right in. Rivka, this first question is, what does it mean to you to be an activist in 2021?
So I really appreciate the question. And it's kind of funny because I'm coming to that question with preconceived ideas of what activist means to me. Mm. And then my mind kind of opens up to, I know you're familiar. We've talked about Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, who wrote We Should All Be Feminists.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She also wrote Purple Hibiscus, but I'm referencing her writing in We Should All Be Feminists when she says tongue in cheek, like the ideas that come with the word feminism.
Yeah.
And so she started to call herself. So someone said, you know, if you're a feminist, you're not happy. If you're a feminist, you don't wear makeup. If you're a feminist, you know, you're not these things, or you are these things. And so tongue in cheek, she's like, at one point I became like a feminist who is happy, who doesn't hate men, who wears lip gloss and loves high heels. And so with this question, what does it mean to be an activist? I'm like, no, I'm not an activist. I'm an advocate, because my mind goes to an idea of what an activist is supposed to look like.
Mm.
Much like that similarity with Chimamanda, when she references what a feminist is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And I think of an activist as being in the street, holding that bullhorn or that megaphone, and being in your face. And I value the activist. This is not a devaluing of that role in any sense. I just see myself more as a quiet mover. And not so loud, but my action. So the reason why I really value this question is because I've had to really think about that, because 2021 has called me and others in our world to a different place of action, a very intentional place of action, and not a quiet place. And yet I'm still struggling with the word activist mm-hmm. being assigned to me, because I've just never thought of myself as an activist, just really identified more with being an advocate.
Mm.
But if activism means that I am in action, then I guess I've crossed over. It's just a matter of language use, really. But 2021 has required us to not be quiet.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the way that you talked about this. Like, there's this story in my mind, like this transformation from like quiet activist or quiet advocate to like full-on activist, whatever that looks like. And one of the reasons why I start off with this question with every guest is to get this wide dynamic view and definition of activism, because it does look so different for different people. And I suspect that a lot of people are doing everyday activism, but they're just not calling it that. Just like you, because you're like, oh, I'm not on the streets, I don't have my bullhorn, but I am out there doing things, creating impact, standing up for the things that I believe, advocating, amplifying, which basically means you're an activist. So it's a great question.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing with feminism too. And as you're going through and you're learning, you're recognizing that you actually need to step up your voice in these areas.
Mm.
I mean, being brought up in a home where feminism was very much the norm, and then coming into adulthood thinking, oh, that's been taken care of, you know,
right.
Because that was my reality. How ignorant and simplistic. And my poor parents, they're probably knocking their heads against the wall. Like, what did we do wrong? This girl thinks it's all done, you know? It's just as you are learning and your eyes are being opened up more every single day, you can't ignore that.
Absolutely.
That call. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so recently I've started to use the terms activist and anti-racist synonymously, because there's this shared component of action and of, you know, the movement and figuring out what it is that you have to do. I think they're branches on the same tree. And so, Rivka, I would love to hear, when you hear the word anti-racism, anti-racist thoughts, beliefs, ideas, what does that mean to you?
Anti-racism in and of itself, I think of being a person who is active in the belief that your race does not make you less than another race. It also means being aware of how the race of some people has made them disadvantaged and less than in certain circumstances, and actually many circumstances. So being anti-racist means being aware, learning, taking action, and really understanding, because Carrie, you and I have had, we've had several years now to slowly move into a relationship, right? So we haven't, it wasn't the crash and burn friendship. It's been this slow acquiring of learning one another and wanting more. I think I'm speaking for myself. But, individual. Thank you. Really, I have a hard, difficult story in my life. And yet it has nothing to do with my skin color. And so as an anti-racist, I recognize that this hard story of a person of color, it has to do with their skin color. And I want to be part of changing that for people of color.
Absolutely. This idea of interrupting the systems, interrupting the beliefs, the ideas, all these falsehoods that are out there that do say that we are less than and that we deserve, you know, less in whatever. And right. Really, I mean, in, if we're going to be honest, in every.
I know. I'm like, it's not really certain circumstances. It's not across the board.
And pretty much everything. for sure. But this is why I love hearing from allies, and I love you unpacking like your definition for people, because we're all trying to like grab onto this idea where it makes the most sense to us and wherever we can. And so I think it's really powerful to hear kind of your experience of it and the way that you shared and the way that you liken it to your advocacy and to feminism and all of these other things that are very much a part of the person that you are.
Well, thank you. I also recognize, even coming into this conversation with you about anti-racism and being an anti-racist, the second I think I've evolved, Carrie, to being that person is the second I don't deserve to be called one. Because I can never empathize to the level of true experience with a person of color. So I must always take the back seat to listening, hearing, learning, and learning how to advocate or learning how to be an advocate. And I think that's part of my learning process in the realm of even tiptoeing into allowing somebody to recognize that I'm anti-racist. Because it's such a deep well of systemic privilege that I'm discovering. And so I come to this table very, very much aware of the humility that needs to clothe my being.
I mean, this is a lifetime journey for sure. And every single person, regardless of their skin color, or where they're from or what they look like, is entering it and entered it in different levels of awareness with different skills, different capacities. And what I'm saying is that you can only be where you are. And the most important thing, I think, on an anti-racist journey is exactly what you said, Ripka, is to continue to move forward at all times. Because this is, I mean, it's anytime you try to go into a subject and learn more, master it, the moment you step in, you realize you have no idea like what you're talking about, or what you had no idea how deep this was. And that's for, you know, trivial topics, let alone topics like race and racism in America and the world, right? So the second you step in, you realize, whoa. And, you know, speaking specifically for different allies who are entering in, because, you know, when George Floyd was murdered, it was what I'm calling like another race awakening. People who weren't paying attention to racism or who were taking a back seat suddenly were like, oh, hey, what? And something was awakened, I think, in a lot of people's consciousnesses. And so now we're at this place where how do I get into this? What should I read? What should I do? I don't want to make a mistake. I'm afraid to say the wrong thing. People are in all kinds of different places. But welcome to the fray. And, you know, keep taking a step forward. And, you know, step forward sometimes look like steps sideways and steps backward, but continuing to move, to learn, to grow, to realize that we aren't anywhere close to where we can be. And I'm an idealist. I'm a positive person. I know that we can build a world where everyone ultimately is free to be themselves. Yeah. And
the great work, and I don't want to cut you off. I just want to add to what you're saying, is that the great work in stepping in, like you say, is I remember my husband's name is Brian, and many years ago, Brian and I were talking about race and issues within that realm for people, mm-hmm. for humanity. And I remember he and I just saying, you know, if we had lived during the times of the Underground Railroad, we would hope that we would be the people supporting it and helping it. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like it was then. And there wasn't a place for us now. Hmm. And what has been so phenomenal in my learning journey is learning that there is a place for me now. And learning the iterations of what that is. It's not a history story that's been done and closed. Hmm. And I didn't get to participate. You know, like, I mean, we were just... You know, we were having that affinity for the work and hoping that we would have been those people that jumped in. And I feel very grateful in my own learning of tools and, you know, even there's just so much has transpired in this past year that's helped me recognize like, oh, this is what it looks like to be in the Underground Railroad. This is what it looks like to be one of those people that I would admire.
Mm, that's amazing.
Aspiring to be that anyway.
Right, for sure. So Rivka, let's talk a little bit more about like, what does activism look like in your world? What are the things that you're doing, that you're seeing, that you're experiencing? How are you, how have you stepped into this fray?
It's funny because I always say there's the Rivka Bent professional and then there's the Rivka Bent personal.
Yes.
when it comes to this work of activism or advocacy, because you know I'm still that activism jacket's not exactly fitting me well.
Taylor.
What it means in practical terms is allowing myself to wake up. So in the professional realm, it's stepping into discomfort. And sometimes you step into it not knowing. Mm. And sometimes that's actually ordained. That's a divine ordination. Guess what? You're going to be here. Like when I attended the People of Color Conference. Because the professional Rivka thinks, okay, we attend a conference, so we're all here together. That's ridiculous and so stupid. I was like, Rivka, what are you, in kindergarten? You know, like, here we are, white Rivka in a people of color conference. You know, oh, you mean this is a people of color conference for people of color? And I am a guest, not a participant? Oh, that's different. Oh, that's privilege. Oh, you know what I mean? It's like this awakening. Mm-hmm. But and it was such a good experience to, in a sense, receive a spanking, so to speak, of, oh, that's what privilege is. Because when you're in the in-group, you don't necessarily recognize that. And so being woke is part of the process of being an activist or an advocate. And then what do I do with that? That's the next thing. And so one of the skills in this work is asking questions. For example, you know, I'm in single-sex education for girls.
Right.
And we're immersed in the world of women and equity for women and the, you know, inequality for women. And, you know, I came into this role about 8 years ago knowing that women got the vote in 1920. Why didn't I know that Black women didn't get the vote in 1920? That it took 45 more years? That's despicable to me. And those are the questions that when you're waking up, you're like, why didn't I know? And so as I'm reading anything, I'm like, when I come across something that is a, that's interesting. In the past, I might have said, that's interesting. And now as an advocate and an activist, I recognize that that's when I pause. And that's when I have to ask deeper questions. And then what does that mean? So as in the professional world, that has allowed me to really deep dive into our recruiting and hiring practices. What do our what is our inclusion language? What does that look like across the whole organization? Even if my role isn't necessarily in the forefront of moving a systemic circumstance within my organization, yet I think it's important that this work of advocacy thread across other, you know, curricular or cross-departmental areas. How am I taking action to include that for others to consider? And so professionally, that's what it means. It's really looking at our systems, looking at our processes. How are our processes providing equitable opportunities for all people, considering the XYZ, knowing that I don't know all of the XYZ. So now I need to get curious. And so I think it's just really being, you know, waking up to the types of questions that I can ask, the areas that I can start infusing change. And then in my personal life, that is 100% translated. 100% translated over. It just, you know, I'm not, I don't have hiring practices in my personal life, as far as I don't have employees working for me. But, you know, when I am thinking about, or if I'm reading for pleasure and I am stopped by a circumstance, then I begin to recognize asking that question. Sorry, somebody was knocking at my door. Little distracting.
That's okay. We're in a pandemic. All kinds of crazy things are happening right behind me.
Oh dear. Excuse me for just a minute. I'm so funny. No. Anyway, that's so funny. I have all the doors closed.
They're like, Rivka, are you there?
It's like, it's the life of the mom. Like the greatest title I have in my life, you know, Carrie, is that of mom. And honestly, it goes with me everywhere in my professional world. So I feel like people are like, you're here. I know you're here. Mom, you're going to the bathroom. Come out. Can I please poop in private?
Please, please.
Yeah. So there's nowhere sacred.
No, anyway. Not for moms and not for you. So I want to touch on a couple of things. I want you to, I would love to hear more about kind of what this advocate activist role looks like in your personal life. That's kind of where we were going when the knock came. And then I have another question that I want to go back to, but let's start back there. And tell us about, or tell me about the library that you created outside your home. I love this so much.
So I just I'm a literacy for all nerd. As I've traveled the world, and I'm bilingual with a little bit of a dabble in two other languages. So I'm bilingual, biliterate in Spanish and English. And then I can read Hebrew and recite prayers, but let's not talk in Hebrew. And then I can get by very minimally in France with French. But I think having that, having more languages than one in my life has just made me really aware of the beauty of language. That's how we connect as human beings. And when you travel in other countries where you don't know the language at all, I mean, in Japan, you know, I'm dead in the water. I can't read the language whatsoever. And I think about, you know, I translate those experiences over here to our immigrant population that are here in the United States and who have come here because they are seeking something better. So I think about the importance of literacy, because that is a key to a locked door of opportunity. And I don't want anyone to not have that key of opportunity.
Right.
And so the Little Free Library organization and project across the world, to me, is one of those beautiful testaments to literacy for all. And so I've, and as you know, I lost my son. And one of the hardest things for me as a mom who has, who carries around that burden of that pain, and I'll try not to be emotional, I hate to see my son's name on a tombstone. It's the worst thing in the world for me because I can't get around that reality. And so I really wanted this Little Free Library to be erected. And then I honored my son through that. So our charter says honoring Cole Bent, United States Marine. And it is now a happy place. So I don't have to see his name on that tombstone. I see his name on this exhibit of literacy for all. And this past year in my learning, the area of advocacy that has really translated within that Little Free Library world is recognizing the opportunity that I have in that small sphere to introduce inclusion stories. And so I have been sourcing authors of color. I've been sourcing stories about women. I have been sourcing stories and books for the disabled community. And also sourcing different cultures and different language resources. And so that has been really one of those touch points that I feel like I have been able to be actively engaged in. And then I post on my Instagram account these stories, and then I highlight these authors. And it's just a way, a small, tangible way that I get to help change perspectives or bring in a new opportunity of learning at different levels. And my Little Free Library is listed on the world map in the Little Free Library catalog. You can go look in San Juan Capistrano. I think there's just maybe three or four of us and you would find it.
I love that. So Rivka, I love this story, and I love that I got to learn even more detail about it. And I wanted you to share it because I think it's so important for people to see different kinds of activism. It doesn't have to be a grand, humongous thing where you're taking on the state government and you're out doing all this thing. It can be something as simple yet impactful as thinking about inclusion in the library that you've created outside of your home for your neighbors to use and to interact with and to consume. So I just love that. And how did you come up with the idea to start to make your library inclusive? Like, where did that spark from?
Well, it was, I guess, back to that previously I mentioned, you know, how can like, I hope that I would be that person in that time of the Civil War that was in favor of, you know, anti-slavery. And so here I am in 2021, and I have, I mean, the Little Free Library ribbon cutting was, I think, January 2019. Mm-hmm. And so it's really starting to look like, oh, what can this look like today? Mm-hmm. What can I do today? And I just started to ask that question professionally, and that goes back to me, you know, starting to look at our hiring practices professionally. What could I do today? Today I can change job descriptions to include cultural competency requirements. Hmm. Today I could really intentionally start sourcing books to ensure that this library is continually stocked. Because a lot of times little free libraries are erected, and then it's just up to whoever passes by and drops in the book and takes a book. Mm-hmm. But I had the opportunity to say, I'm intentionally stewarding this library for inclusion stories. And then now here in the role that I have at this school, I oversee a team of students called Architects of Change. And I talked to them about my Little Free Library, and I've shared with them some of the inclusion stories that I have sourced, and I purchased them. And they are going to erect one here on the outside of the wall. So it's actually in the community.
Right.
It will reflect the building style of the school. And then Architects of Change Club will steward this in perpetuity as long as they can. Intentionally with inclusion stories. And we actually have our building date is June 3rd after school. And these students are coming back in their summer after the week mm-hmm. after finals, you know, and they're like, yes, we're building. And then our ribbon cutting is set for August 20th. And so that's really, it's been really inspirational for me to share with this group of students also how you can be an advocate today. And so that's how it came about this year, is really Black Lives Matter. Black lives have always mattered to me. But recognizing that Black lives have been suffering, and that is why the voices are crying up again. So when you say George Floyd lifted the lid, and Brian and I at home were like, again, are we the most daft human beings on the planet that we have to be like woken up again? There is nothing new under the sun for the African American population and people of color. This cry is so old, and how sad that we have moved the needle so little. It's so frustrating. And so I think this year was, Rivka, the time is now. Hmm. What can you do today? And I think I do wake up every day with that intention. And 2021 really helped me, because I've been in the work of learning DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion work for a while now. And also, and probably it comes in one of your next questions of, you know, when did that start for you? You know, so I had the fortunate opportunity in my family to be in an inclusive environment. But I think coming into the comfortability of understanding how to use my privilege, which is just what I woke up with. You know, I was born with a skin color. And I didn't know that skin color came with a privilege. And with your privilege comes responsibility. And what do you do with that? That's been, I think, a radical shift for me this past year.
Thank you so much for sharing all of this. You know, one thing that I want to comment that kind of sparked for me was this idea of what can I do today? If everyone asked them that question, what can I do today for someone who doesn't look like me? And I love that because I can't like build an institute in a day. I can't become the president in a day. I have to pick something that is accessible and manageable and bite-sized. But these bite-sized things add up. And we have no idea what our ripple effect is because we do something. Someone sees you do something and you might never know that they saw you do or say that thing. And that causes them to think differently or speak differently or act differently. And it's this like perpetual chain. If everyone is waking up and asking themselves, what can I do today? All of our concentric circles will eventually join and the world will start to radically change. Right. And so that's why, to all the listeners, you matter. What you do and what you say, what you don't do and what you don't say all matters because of those ripples. And what kind of ripple are you sending out in the world? And setting that intention, what can I do today? Maybe I don't know, but hey, you know, I would love to just see something out there that might inspire me to act in some small way and just get this ball rolling.
Yes, definitely. And for me, who typically doesn't put any like bumper stickers on her, you know, car, I don't put signs in my yard. This has been a learning experience of really stepping up and allowing my privilege to advocate. What's that word? Advocate?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
For yeah. Others. Yeah.
So Rivka, earlier when we were talking about voting rights for women and that large gap between white women being able to vote and Black women being able to vote, and you're like, how did I not know this? Or it being despicable generally that, you know, that was the experience of these people. And there was something in there that I wanted to go back to because I feel like one of the messages that we hear from people with privilege is that I just didn't know. Like I didn't know. All right. So number one, as a person of color, it's really difficult to like believe that you didn't know. Like we all know, you're like, I didn't know there was a problem with homelessness. Yes, you did. Like we, like I ignore the homeless person on the corner, like if I'm being totally honest, right? So this idea of not knowing, what do you say to the people who are paralyzed by that? I didn't know.
Yeah. So there's actually an African proverb that, that has been, it's very subtle, but it's extremely powerful. At least it has been for me. And the proverb is, to not know is bad, but to wish to not know is worse.
Hmm.
And I think when you are, again, I'm speaking for myself as a white woman who loves all people and always has. But perhaps I didn't want to know what white privilege means. I wasn't skilled in a way that, and that sounds like I don't mean to deflect that responsibility from myself. So I don't mean to say like, oh, I didn't have the skills. So, you know, I don't want to allow for excuses in any way. But when I have grappled with that proverb, I've recognized how perhaps in time I wished to not know. And so I stopped the opportunity of learning. Mm-hmm. And I'll just reference that back to the feminism piece, because like I said, both my parents were feminists, but I didn't, for whatever reason, I didn't engage in deep conversations about that. I might have dismissed it. Like, oh, mom, you know, look at you. You know, you're great. You're doing well. Look at women. Look at, you know, and you point out to the one,
mm-hmm.
not recognizing the hundreds that are suffering. Yeah, the one made it through. The one broke through a glass ceiling. One, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that is a barrier for learning, is to wish to not know. And let's think about that. What would cause us to wish to not know? I can tell you, you pull those layers away and hiding under there wrapped in something that's trying to smell like roses is a piece of shit called fear. And that's what it is, fear. Fear that I'm going to have to do something about it. Fear that I have a responsibility beyond what I think I can handle. Fear that maybe my comfort is going to be questioned. You know, whatever that fear, however it manifests, fear always attempts to market itself as something else so that we buy into it. But it really is the great paralyzer. And so all I can do is reflect back to my younger self and call out the chosen ignorance that I had, because I had resources available for conversations that perhaps I didn't choose to embrace. And I just can't do that anymore because I'm too aware now. And my husband and I also have a saying in our home, and we're such partners, and I always bring him up because we, you know, my richest conversations, I call them kitchen table conversations. Yeah. And that's when you're sitting around the kitchen table and you're talking with family, your children, your spouse, your siblings, your friends. But, you know, it's kind of this proverbial kitchen table. And what we say is we can't unknow what we know. And so that African proverb, to wish to not know is worse. Well, I got that and I can't unknow it now. So that's kind of a long-winded answer.
It was perfect. I just wanted to know. I've always wanted to know when someone says, regardless of whether it's racism, sexism, I've had people like women say, I had no idea that, you know, women didn't, you know, were behind and didn't make us. But I'm like, you're a woman. How did you not? What are you talking about right now? So I've always wanted to be able to ask someone, like, what do you mean? And what can we unpack that? And so I really appreciate you being a safe place for me to ask that, and for you receiving that question as well, versus, you know, I mean, I'm not here to attack anyone, but, you know.
No, and even my answer could be triggering for some people too. Like, well, that's your story. Yeah, that's my story. I can only speak to myself.
Yep.
But I can tell you honestly, I was brought up in, my parents were very educated, and going on and pursuing education is very important in my family. And I remember when I got married young, my dad said, he's going to get you pregnant. You're going to be stuck in the kitchen. You know, like that's like going backwards for women. And what happened, Carrie, is I got pregnant and I got stuck in the kitchen. And I discovered I loved it. And I might not have wanted to know any different, because I was really loving that place where I was. Mm-hmm. I was really liking that. And that's another thing, I think, as an advocate and as a white woman, for example, and I just want to speak right now to the potential that I've triggered people, is that when I went into that People of Color conference, I go in as a lover of human beings. And I was exhausted. And I got to rest. I was exhausted emotionally and intellectually from, wow, I was a guest, you know, finding my place, not exactly fitting in, being chastised in some arenas when I spoke and I wasn't really being asked to speak. A lot of processing. And I was exhausted from that. And I got to rest. Bing, that's my privilege. I got to rest because I didn't wake up with skin color that goes before me. And that's my privilege, is resting. So like I got to maybe rest in my 20s. And that's my privilege. Because a woman of color, and especially a woman of color, because like when you think about the chain of hierarchical existence, you know, people of color have this struggle, but women of color, you know, take it down even further, right?
Yeah.
And yet you wake up and you don't get to change that. You know, I woke up and I wasn't in the People of Color conference anymore. I was in the safe world of my environment where I walk out the door and I'm not receiving any microaggressions because of my skin color.
Right.
And so there's rest there. And so just being able to recognize what that means in my place of privilege and how my place of privilege actually enables the interruption of my learning.
Mm.
So that's what I want to speak to and allow for the you know, additional white people who might be listening to this podcast, who might be frustrated by what I'm saying, is allow it to ruminate. And that's going back to asking the questions. Like, what does she mean by this? That's really pissing me off. Why is it pissing me off? You know, that start to just allow yourself to ask and find your own way. This is my story. I can only speak for myself. But as far as white skin privilege, that is not just my story.
Right. Absolutely. Rivka, this has been amazing, just like I knew that it would be. I have one final question for you before we wrap up today. And this is the question that I like to always end with. So for that person out there who is listening and hasn't started to activate themselves, haven't started to advocate, is trying to figure out how to break in, enter the fray, what advice do you give to them to help them start to take those steps to join us in this work and creating the world that we all want to see?
I think allow yourself to be ready to learn. And then arm yourself with resources of learning. So sitting with me on my desk right here are a few different resources in front of me. There's a book here by Laura Kooman, and it's actually on, it's called All Stirred Up, Suffrage Cookbooks, Food, and the Battle for Women's Right to Vote. And that was a gift I received. Actually, I won it. It's a prize. And Laura is a Jewish author, a white woman. And I just thought it was a cookbook. So I just sat down one day and I'm like, I'm just going to look through this. Well, wow. She talks about the suffrage movement. She talks about the racial inequality within the women. Like Susan B. Anthony was for white women to vote and was openly racist against men of color and women of color for that matter. But really in her rhetoric, it was addressed to men because she thought that white women should have the right to vote before black men. Mm-hmm. Not even considering the woman of color, right? And as she talks about that, she's talking about, how do I reconcile these things? How do I reconcile that Susan B. Anthony and Mary Caton, I think is how you say her name, these were phenomenal women. And then she talks about Ta-Nehisi Coates, who wrote Between the World and Me. Okay, pause. She just brought up an author who helped her reconcile the circumstance of facing a historical conundrum. So now guess what? I have Ta-Nehisi Coates' book in my hand because I need help with that. And then as a Jewish woman too, because as a Jewish woman, we have a kinship with that level of discrimination through Nazi Germany and through anti-Semitism. But again, it's not connected to the skin. So then one of the resources that has been phenomenal for me, she's Dr. Beverly Daniel Tatum. Mm-hmm. She wrote, Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's taken me like a year and a half and I'm still not done with the book because it's increments. It's increments that I can ingest at a time. But in that, just that resource, which I haven't even finished yet, there's a section on learning how to be white. And Carrie, that's the funny thing, is I'm learning how to be white.
Hmm.
How to be a white woman in the story of anti-racism.
Right.
And so One of those tools is arming myself with stories and heroes that are white, that are doing this work. So now I have another resource called Everyday White People Confront Racial and Social Injustice, written by, it's actually so many different people's stories, but it's edited by Eddie Moore Jr., Marguerite Pennick Parks, and Ali Michael. So it's like I have to step into what the white ally story means in history to borrow from those people. And Eleanor Roosevelt, she's been guiding me the slow drip because her relationship with Marian Anderson in a children's book that I had is where I learned about the relationship with Eleanor Roosevelt and Marian Anderson and how Eleanor Roosevelt stood up against the Daughters of American Revolution when they discriminated against Marian performing. And that story, I was like, wow, she stood up. She said, this does not work for me. You know, Eleanor said that. And so I think, you know, learning how to be an advocate means to resource yourself. I'm repeating myself now. You can stop me at any time. and also, I guess I'll give my big period, my big punctuation mark with a quote from Mother Teresa, which has helped me as well. Be mobile in this effort. And she said, if you look around the world to find good people and you cannot find a one, attempt to be the good yourself.
Wow. Rivka, you are very learned. You are surrounded by these incredible authors and resources and books, and you're creating spaces so that other people are getting access to books and information and inclusive thinking. Just thank you so much for being here and sharing all of your stories with us, for showing up authentically and being willing to answer hard questions and to reflect here real time. You know, this isn't an easy time. I ask you some hard things, and I appreciate you just going on this journey with me. So thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you for providing a space that you allowed me to show up in my flawed humanity and to be real with you. So you really did set the stage for me to be able to come and step into this role of conversation, which is actually kind of scary. So I appreciate that. Thank you so much for being you.
It's my pleasure, Rivka. So if people want more Rivka, like I do, where can they find you? Where's the best way to connect?
Oh, gosh. Well, I have a blog. It's been a little bit stale late, meaning I've gotten one blog post a year in the last few years because this particular role that I've been in for the last 8 years has been very time consuming.
All consuming.
Mm-hmm. All consuming. But it's bentrivka.com. And I also am on Instagram, and that is my bent life. And it doesn't show my name as Rivka Bent. It shows that I am mother to Esther and wife to Brian, because that's the truth. But that's where I post about my little free library as well. So my Bent Life on Instagram, and then bentrivka@bentrivka.com.
Awesome.
And I hope to, so I am transitioning out of this role. And I think we found a successor, so I do hope to have more. I know, which is good that I get to be part of that conversation and really help transition, because I do love the organization I work for, but it's just too far from my house. So I hope to start really investing more time in consistency in writing on the blog.
Awesome. Thank you, Rivka. You're amazing. Yeah.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.